Meeting will come to order.
No.
We have a quorum, so first thing on the agenda, I'd like to have somebody move the minutes. Representative Tao, would you?
So moved.
So moved. Yeah. Representative Tao moves the minutes for January 23rd, 2007. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. The motion prevails. Minutes have been adopted. What we're going to be doing today is hearing the Legislative Auditor's Report on Watershed Management. We have two people from the Legislative Auditor's Report here today with us, Mr. Jim Nobles and Ms. Jan Sandberg. And also there's Mr. David Kirchner, who's here as well, yes, to take questions. A very important issue dealing with our waters and its management. So I know that there's going to be a lot of questions. I think if there's a burning question that you need to ask during the testimony that you think needs to be answered right away, feel free to ask, but the preference would be if you could hold your questions until the end so they can get through their presentation. Make sure that the presentation is given in totality before questions are asked. That would be appreciated. So thank you. And with that, I'd like to begin with Mr. Nobles and Ms. Sandberg, if you would state your names and before you begin for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Jim Nobles. I'm the Legislative Auditor. And I would also like to recognize that John Patterson is with us. He was actually the manager of this project, but he has moved on to the executive branch, but he agreed to be with us to answer questions, so he will also be available. We do appreciate this opportunity to present to you our report on watershed management. Our report is about several interrelated things. It's about land and water, and it's about the relationship between the state and many and varied forms of local units of government that are involved in watershed management. Having local governments, local communities, and even private citizens involved in watershed management is essential. Watershed management is, after all, largely about land use. Farm fields, shopping malls, housing developments, roads are all on the land in specific places. They do not move. They are inherently local. But they all affect the water, and the water does move. Water does not stay local. Water does not stay within the political boundaries that we draw on a map. The water that flows through Walker, Minnesota, affects the people who live in Winona, Minnesota. And that makes water a state concern. Watershed management, then, is not just a local issue. It's a partnership between the state and local units of government and their citizens. We evaluated that partnership in response to concerns expressed by legislators, and we found those concerns well-founded. While some watershed management organizations are effective, some are not. More importantly, the state agency that should act when local watershed management organizations struggle and become ineffective, that agency, the Board on Water and Soil Resources, we think has been too slow to act and sometimes reluctant to get involved. Yes, Bowser's authority and resources are limited, but we don't think that explains the whole problem. We think the problem is also rooted in Bowser's governance structure. This is an executive branch agency that is run by a committee that is controlled by local watershed interests. We know that this arrangement has deep historical roots, and we know that it reflects a very delicate political compromise from the past. But to meet the challenges of the future, we think Bowser's governing structure should be changed. And with that change, we will have a stronger, more effective, and more accountable watershed management system in Minnesota. With that, Mr. Chairman, I would like to turn to Jan Sandberg to tell you in more detail what we found and what we recommend. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Chair Aiken, members of the committee, my name is Jan Sandberg, and I work for the Legislative Auditor. I'd like to begin my presentation by summarizing briefly our three key findings in the report. First, we found that Minnesota has a complicated and sometimes confusing management system for our watersheds that includes federal and state agencies and a myriad of local entities. Second, we think those local entities have a mixed record of performance. And finally, we believe that there is inadequate state oversight of those local entities. To understand this complicated system, I'm going to start with a very simple map. This is a map, as you all know, of Minnesota's 87 counties. I'm going to overlay on top of it now our 81 major watersheds, and as you'll see, there's not a whole lot of congruence between the two, and that's part of the problem I'll discuss later. Watersheds are defined by the Department of Natural Resources as that area of land from which water flows into a lake, a stream, or a river. Watersheds and subwatersheds can be as small, very small as the flows into a tiny stream, or they can be as large as the part of the United States that flows into the Mississippi River. What we do on the land, as Jim pointed out, is important, and this is what makes watershed important, because water quality and water quantity is affected by what we do on the land, and it affects what goes into those lakes, streams, and rivers. And as this map shows, if a county wants to work with water within its boundary, it may have to consider 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 different watersheds. And if a group of entities want to manage the water for a watershed, it may have to work with 2, 4, 6 different counties. So in order to manage the watersheds, counties, states, agencies, federal entities engage in a wide range of watershed management activities. Our report goes into some detail about these. I'll just give you a brief overview. As you know, state agencies and local government regulate things like feedlots and septic systems and land use. Also, they may be involved in construction, structures that control the flow of water, like a dam. Some local entities work with landowners for private land to develop best management practices. These are things like installing a grass buffer strip between a plowed field and a stream that can reduce the amount of sediment that flows into the stream. And certainly education is important because citizens need to know what they can do to improve our state's waters. And there's other kinds of activities like conservation easements and planning and monitoring. So who manages the water in Minnesota? I said it was a complicated system. In the next three slides, I'm going to very briefly touch on the local entities, the state agencies, and the federal agencies. I'll start with those local entities that are organized on a watershed basis. This colorful map shows in blue, and that did not mean to imply anything about the different types of entities. In blue are shaded the watershed districts, 46 of them that are in the state of Minnesota. In orange, in the metropolitan area, we have the 23 watershed management organizations, or WMOs, a little shorter, that exist only in the metropolitan area. The watershed districts are scattered around the state. You can see they're in the metro area and in the outstate. They are driven by local petitions in order to form the district. They have boards that are appointed by the counties that are within their jurisdictions. They have the ability to levy taxes. They also have the ability to write rules, and they have most of the tools that they need to address water issues within their boundaries. Now, by state law, within the metropolitan area, every sub-watershed must be managed either by one of these watershed districts or one of these watershed management organizations. Now, these are joint powers boards made up of the cities and the towns that are within their jurisdictions. They usually, but there is one exception, lack levy authority, and they tend to not do projects on the ground so much as play a coordinating role among their cities and towns that are within their boundaries. As you can see from this map statewide, only about 30% or so of Minnesota is actually within a watershed district or a watershed management organization. Next, we have local entities that are based on county boundaries. And there's two types here, the soil and water conservation districts, often called SWCDs, and the counties themselves. There are 91 SWCDs, not 87 as you might think, because five of the counties have split themselves into more than one SWCD. They're shaded on this map, and the boundaries are in red. They're St. Louis County, Otter Tail, Polk, Marshall, and Beltrami. These SWCDs have elected boards. They have no levy authority. Most of their funding comes to them through their affiliated counties, or from the Board of Water and Soil Resources, or Bowser, and sometimes from grants. And they often work with local landowners to install those best management practices I mentioned before on private land. In contrast, in outstate Minnesota, by statute, those counties, the 80 of them, are encouraged to have water plans, and many, I think all of them now, do so because they can access certain funding if they have those plans. Now, our report focused on the four types of entities that I've just mentioned, but there are a lot more that are detailed in the report. There are, of course, the cities and towns. Then there are lake conservation districts and their lake associations. And there are a whole host of others, all of them having a role in one place or another managing the water. But we have focused on these four. Whoops. So what about the state and federal agencies? Well, there's a lot of those, too. And they're detailed again in the report, but just a few of them here. I'll start with the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and I give them a little more detail because they actually have more authority than any other agency over those local entities I just described. Bowser provides guidance, technical assistance, funding, and oversight to all the local entities. But they have many other responsibilities. They administer the Wetlands Conservation Act, and they're governed by an appointed board that selects its own executive director. But you know the other state agencies, I'm sure. The Pollution Control Agency that has responsible for surface water quality, the Department of Natural Resources that has oversight over the public waters and that also has a lot of responsibilities in the area of water quantity, and also the Department of Agriculture that provides substantial funding for, again, those best management practices. And there's others, Department of Health and others. Federal agencies, the ones you most often hear of, are probably the U.S. Department of Agriculture and the Environmental Protection Agency. And, of course, those of you with districts in northwest Minnesota are familiar with the work of the Army Corps of Engineers. So, taken together, how are we doing? We have all these entities in Minnesota. They're all working in some way with water. What can we say about how well we are doing addressing water quality problems and flooding concerns? Are things getting better or are they getting worse? Before I can give you an answer to that, let me just briefly address the issue of impaired waters. I suspect most of you are familiar with this term. Under the Clean Water Act, the Pollution Control Agency is charged with assessing the state's waters. They look at them to determine if a body of water is so polluted that it cannot meet certain functions such as aquatic recreation or supporting aquatic life, or what they call fishability. If that body of water is polluted, and there's pollutants like E. coli, bacteria, and phosphorus, and sediment, it's polluted, it's listed as impaired. Pollution Control Agency tells us that about 40% of Minnesota's waters that have been assessed are currently considered impaired. However, the problem is that we have not assessed very many of our waters in the state. I think only 4% of our lakes, for example, have been assessed for aquatic recreation. Now, PCA tells us that when they finish assessing all the waters, that in fact about 40% of the total waters in the state will also be considered impaired, which means we're going to be adding a lot more of impaired waters to this master list. And they also tell us that those waters will exist in most watersheds throughout the state. Well, switching gears, what about flooding and flood damage? Again, as many of you know only too well, flooding has been and continues to be a problem in parts of Minnesota. So where do we stand? Are things getting better or worse? And unfortunately, I have to tell you that we don't know. We don't know statewide how things are going because we do not have that kind of data that's available statewide over a long enough period of time where we can calculate trends, either to look at water quality or to reduction of flood damage. Parts of the state do not have flood maps, they're old and out of date, and I've already mentioned that we have holes in our water quality data. And the situation doesn't get much better in another respect. We thought we could look at local entities, look at how they're doing statewide, and make some assessments based on their performance. Remember I mentioned that local entities are an important part of our statewide management system. However, we discovered that there is no statewide database or information. State agencies just don't collect that sort of information on what those local entities are doing. So as a way of answering this question, we conducted 15 case studies scattered throughout the state, different types of entities, different parts of the state. There's a map of them in the appendix of our report. What we found was what we have labeled as mixed performance. We found some entities that are doing a terrific job, and we found some others that we labeled as struggling. And when I talk about struggling, I'll define that in a minute. But and remember, we're talking about our 15 case studies here. We have reason to believe that this is not a situation that's limited to those case studies. We're going to find good performers and not so good performers throughout the rest of the state. Some of the good performers you've probably heard about or may have. The Soft River Watershed District worked with the Stearns County SWCD. It's in the central part of Minnesota. And working with other partners, they were able to reduce the phosphorus levels in the Soft River chain of lakes almost in half over an 8-year period. The Bassett Creek Watershed Management Commission is one of those WMOs in the metropolitan area. It's in Hennepin County. They worked with their members, the Army Corps of Engineers, to develop a series of projects, one of which was replacing a tunnel that goes under the city of Minneapolis. In 2003, it's estimated they avoided $20 million in flood damage from a single event because of that tunnel. We think those are successful entities. But we found some that we think are struggling. You may have heard of the South Two River Watershed District, also in central Minnesota, a district in place for 20 years. In that time, they didn't do very much. In fact, they had no projects. And citizen unrest, which is probably a kind term, ultimately resulted in a petition to Bowser to terminate the district, which Bowser agreed to do at the end of last year. The Upper Rum River WMO is in Anoka County. It's, again, one of those oversight entities that works with its, supposed to work with its member cities to kind of coordinate activities. Yet when we looked through their minutes and other documents, we could find no evidence, any mention at all, that any sort of coordination or oversight existed. There was essentially no discussion of local issues. And finally, the Comfort Lake Forest Lake Watershed District in Washington County is a little bit different. It's been in place since about 1999. They have done studies. However, they have done no projects, developed no rules, which is extremely unusual in the metropolitan area, and in fact not even developed an education program as they said they would do in their management plan. So why does it matter? Why does it matter what local entities are doing? I mean, we've got state agencies and federal agencies involved. Is this a big deal? Unfortunately, for Minnesota, it's a big deal. We could talk about water being a state resource, but what's more important, our state has made a decision that local units of government are the entities that are going to do the work on the ground in most cases throughout the state. The state relies on them to do a good job and spend grant money and other things wisely, and we think that that is not consistently happening. Because it's not consistently happening, we feel that you need to more strongly provide oversight for these local entities. And as you all know, over the last century, the legislature has consistently found that the protection and regulation of the state's waters is in the state's public interest. We also know, as I mentioned before, water flows. It doesn't stay within one jurisdiction. And watersheds are linked together, and it flows from one watershed throughout a basin into other watersheds. So we have actions that one local government, which could be very well intended, have taken that, in fact, can have negative consequences further downstream. And as an example of that is a situation I'm sure you're all familiar with, is the Lake Pepin situation. This map shows Lake Pepin. It's a natural lake in the Mississippi River. It's highlighted here. It sits at the bottom of this confluence of basins. The basins all flow down. They flow into the Mississippi River. They flow through Lake Pepin. Lake Pepin is impaired for phosphorus. So we have a situation where lots of decisions have been made throughout the state, and those decisions now have kind of culminated downstream into one body of water. In 2005, the State Court of Appeals ruled that the Pollution Control Agency could not issue a permit for a system within, I think it was Annandale Maple Lake. It's shown here, and if you look on the map, it's not exactly next door to Lake Pepin. It's upstream. And we found that, in fact, that permit could not be issued because that facility would dump additional phosphorus into the waters, and those waters would eventually reach Lake Pepin. So we have a situation now where multiple decisions are possibly going to impact the development of a large part of our state, and we think that's a problem. As we told you, we found some weak performance among some of our local entities. So now the next question is, what are we doing about it? Who's looking at what actions are taken, what's being done? The Board of Water and Soil Resources is the state agency responsible for overseeing these local entities, and we think that their oversight has been weak. We think an effective oversight system requires performance standards to be established. We think that it requires systematic monitoring of that performance, evaluation of the performance against the standards, and then holding those local entities accountable on a regular basis. And we do not see that Bowser has systematically done this. Now, I want to be perfectly fair here. We did not evaluate Bowser. We did not. I told you before, they do lots of things. We didn't look at those things. We looked at the oversight responsibility. So that's all I can talk about. In this area, we found the oversight to be weak. We looked for reasons for this weakness, and we found a couple. And I'll explain them to you here. First of all, Bowser just flat out has limited statutory authority, particularly in upstate Minnesota, and certainly has less authority than we think it needs. Its main power in outstate Minnesota comes from its approval or disapproval of those management plans. They generally run on a 10-year cycle. However, once the plan's approved in outstate Minnesota, there's not much Bowser can do. They can't go in and ask an entity why it's not following its plan. They essentially have no authority to get them to comply and perform in a better way. Now, Bowser does have the ability to terminate a watershed district. I just described that was done just recently. However, it does not initiate and cannot initiate that proceeding. That must be initiated at the local level. However, even where Bowser has more authority, which they do have in the metropolitan area, we found that they are reluctant to exercise that authority. In our case studies where we found weak performance, we consistently found that Bowser's involvement was in the planning stage, but once the plans were completed, they did not choose to get involved in the period between those plans. Now, with the Upper Rum River, for example, they're now engaged in developing a new draft plan. Bowser has been involved with that development of that plan, working with the other state review agencies, giving feedback to the WMO. But in the period before that new drafting started, there was no feedback to them about what they could do to improve their performance, even guidance on what they needed to do. And there's considerable detail in a table in our report about the authority oversight. And as we show in this slide, we think that Bowser really holds these entities accountable for what they plan, not for what they actually do. So we think more oversight is needed, and you probably are asking, why now? Well, I can point back to the state resource issue, but you all know that. One of the big reasons it's important now, and legislators raised this concern with us last spring, we have this thing called the Clean Water Legacy Act. Last year, you all voted $24.9 million, one-time money, to much of which is going to local entities, that went through a variety of state agencies. This year, I think the governor's budget has upped it a bit to $40 million a year in continuing funds. And last I heard, if I've been listening to the committee meetings right in the Senate, they're already marking up a bill for a constitutional amendment that's likely to improve a clean water portion to it, which could up the amount of money, maybe double it, maybe more. We think it's necessary for the state to have effective systems in place so that these local entities are doing a good job. We're talking about a lot of money that's going to be flowing through to them. And moreover, we think it's important that we have effective entities statewide, not just where they choose to become involved, because remember, the water issues are going to be a problem statewide, not just in a couple of places in our state. So therefore, we make a series of recommendations. We think the legislature needs to require Bowser to essentially establish an effective oversight program, and that would require performance standards, which could vary by type of entity. There's no reason why a watershed district has to have the same set of standards as SWCD. We think that you have to have them collect performance and financial data. We think that they need to monitor the local entities to see if they're meeting those standards. And finally, we think it would be extraordinarily useful to citizens, legislators, and counties if public assessments of those entities were released. These entities are often invisible to some of the citizens. They don't know what they do or what they're doing. Such information, even the counties would find very useful. We also have a couple of other recommendations. First, we think you need to give Bowser a wider range of tools. Quite frankly, the authority that they have is not what we think it needs to be if they're going to encourage and compel local entities to get the job done. Secondly, we will admit that we're asking them to do a lot, and that may take additional funding. And this is up to you. We did not evaluate Bowser to see if they have money somewhere that could be shifted over. This is your decision, but we think we're asking them to do an awful lot more. And third, as Jim mentioned, we have a recommendation to change Bowser's governing structure. We understand it will be controversial, but we think there's some problems with accountability. Bowser is a 17-member board. It's defined in statute. The majority of the board members must represent the four local the groups of local entities that I discussed earlier. We think this sets up an odd scenario. We have local entities that are responsible to Bowser and Bowser that's responsible to local entities. And we are not saying that the board has acted inappropriately, exerted undue influence or anything. We're just saying that the structure seems problematic to us. Therefore, we think you should hold Bowser to be more accountable. In effect, we think Bowser needs to be accountable, not to its governing board, but to the legislature, to the governor. Therefore, we think that the executive director of Bowser needs to be appointed by the governor and confirmed by the Senate. And we also recommend that the Bowser's governing board become an advisory commission. We think that information from the local level and different types of entities is very useful, but we don't think that they should be governing and setting policy for a state agency. Frankly, we don't understand why you would treat water any differently than you treat other valuable state resources and responsibilities like education and transportation. We think it should be accountable to the legislature and to the governor. Now, Mr. Chair, with that, I conclude our presentation except for one notice. If you haven't looked in Chapter 5 of our report, many legislators had lots of questions that they wanted answered, and we have included those within a policy option section. There are things like sunsetting organization, consolidating local level, consolidating state level, eliminating WMOs, and how board members are selected. These were issues that were raised with us by legislators last spring, and we tried to address them, not rising to the level of a recommendation, but a 10 where we give you pros and cons on each issue. And our appendix session includes a variety of appendices that, in fact, answer some of those, describe some of those entities that we included in our case studies. If you have any questions, please feel free to give us a call. And we would be delighted to answer your questions now or after Bowser gives our presentation at your booth.
Thank you, Ms. Sandberg. First of all, as you mentioned giving tools to Bowser, and I was wondering what kinds of tools would you be suggesting or recommending?
Well, one of them was increased oversight authority, but one thing I think we mentioned in our report, and Mr. Patterson probably is better equipped to discuss this, and he might want to slide over here, is we think Bowser should be recommending what some of these tools should be. We think they know local watershed management better than anybody, and we think they're in a position to make some of these. In fact, we have recommendations to come back with a report to you all in a year with some of those recommendations of what sorts of tools they would need to get the work done more effectively. I don't know, John.
Mr. Patterson?
For the record, I'm John Patterson, formerly with the legislative auditor. I've now moved on to the executive branch. I think if you look at statute, there is a lot of authority that Bowser has over watershed districts and WMOs within the metropolitan area. Those authorities are lacking outstate. So one step is to give similar authority to outstate, to Bowser for outstate watershed districts. They can direct other state agencies, and an entity is not performing well, to withhold funding, to withhold the authority to issue, have permitting authority, and carry out other types of activity. So that's one step you could take. And as Jan had mentioned, what we really want to do is have Bowser identify what authorities they think they would need to implement and hold entities accountable for the standards that we would ask the legislature to direct them to do.
Thank you. Any other questions at all? Yes. Representative Haas.
Well, thank you for allowing me to be a guest today. As a county commissioner, we were tied up with some of these that were good and some of these that were not so good. But one of the things that I noted that I thought I would throw out for people to think about, if you're talking about funding Bowser, you can fund from the top down, from the state down, but you also can fund from the bottom up, because the watershed districts do have taxing authority. And they might be able to pay for, or maybe they should be paying for, some of the services that are now going to be larger from Bowser, and I just thought I would comment for that. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Saylor?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I guess any of you that would want to address this. I'm just wondering, in your opinion, how much of the cited problems with Bowser, with ineffectiveness in oversight, how much of that do you think might be attributable to jurisdictional conflict or confusion between DNR, PCA, and Department of Ag?
Mr. Sandberg?
I think
Mr. Patterson, excuse me.
The way it works now with a lot of local entities is that they have a watershed district. They're really only accountable to, say, PCA when they receive a grant from PCA. They get a Clean Water Partnership grant. So their oversight and accountability is just tied to that. Mm-hmm. But if an entity isn't receiving any grant funding from the state at all, it's using its independent taxing authority, there really isn't anyone overseeing it at the state level. I mean, counties have some role in that. So I think from that perspective, there isn't a lot of, confusion about who is in charge. I think in a lot of cases it's clearly us that should be Bowser that should be providing the primary oversight authority. It's the one entity that can look at the overall operations of those entities. While PCA and DNR may only have pieces over oversight over pieces of their operations when it's tied to grant funding.
Mr. Chairman, I might just elaborate. I think what we've seen over the course of doing this evaluation and what many of you have undoubtedly heard in your experiences as well is that Bowser considers itself an advocacy forum where all of these interests come to St. Paul or wherever they meet to sort of thrash out their issues, and that Bowser's attitude towards issues that are left local should be that they should be sorted out locally. And as I think many of you know, there have been some watershed management organizations that have gotten into considerable internal conflicts, some of them quite passionate, quite heated. And they've really brought some of those organizations to a virtual dysfunction. And inaction and action at the local level, as we've said a number of times, has an impact. That water comes downstream. And if so, if you have an organization that is not doing what it needs to do, in our view, Bowser should be involved much more actively, rigorously, holding those people to account for what they said they were going to do, for the grants that they received, what the state needs them to do to achieve state water goals. I think Bowser sees its role very differently. I think that does come to some degree from its history, how it was formed, its authority, but I think it is reflective of the board. That the board is, as we've said a number of times, dominated by local interests. And I think that they feel that local issues, even where they bring an organization to dysfunction, should be left for local people to sort out. We take a different view. We think that these issues are of such state importance that where the state sees a situation locally that is not working well, the state Bowser should be willing to step in. I don't think the board takes that view.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have several questions and comments. First of all, on slide 13, you state that Bowser has been reluctant to use their authority and it holds entities accountable for what they plan, not what they do. Can you give me a better understanding of what you're trying to say there?
Well, when we saw Bowser's involvement in the metropolitan area in our case studies, we found them quite involved in the and when they developed the plans, those 10-year comprehensive plans. They are detailed documents. They have a number of requirements. They involve, in the metro area, as you know, they involve other state review agencies. And we have found Bowser involved in that. That's something I think they pride themselves on, is doing reviews and working with the other agencies. Problem was we didn't see them getting involved with those local entities after those plans were finished. So we think that a good plan is obviously extremely important, but then somebody needs to follow the plan. And, in fact, that plan could form some of the standards that we're thinking of that need to be done, because plans are developed in consideration of what's going on in neighboring communities and other statewide state concerns and standards. I don't know if John has a...
Mr. Patterson.
Representative Osmond, I think the Rum River case study, which is in the appendix of the report, is a good example of that. You, in the case study, we talk about specific comments that Bowser and the Metropolitan Council had about what the WMO was planning to do. But as we talk on the case study, the WMO has not been very active, and Bowser wasn't willing to step in and try to make them active during the time period between the plans.
Senator Bosman, did you have?
Yes, I do, Mr. Chair. Also on where you were talking about the difference between the watershed districts and the soil and water conservation districts, we have the odd combination that we have appointed individuals that have taxing authority and we have elected individuals that do not have taxing authority. And I'm wondering as to whether the some of the failures that you've seen, especially in the soil and water conservation district areas, was because they had didn't have access to funds to kind of do things that they needed to do on a local basis. Did you find any correlation between their ability to access local monies and those failures?
Mr. Chair, Representative
Patterson.
Of our case studies, we only looked at one SWCD that we saw as struggling or involved in turmoil, and it's a unique situation. We've actually looked at the Hennepin County Conservation District. That entity struggled not because it lacked funding, it's that they had turmoil on their board. They had board members who actually were suing each other, which sort of brought the district to standstill, but made them not able to pursue the activity they should be. Hennepin County actually decided to not fund them and actually take over a lot of their functions. So that didn't answer your question, but we didn't, in our case studies, we didn't see a correlation between SWCDs not performing poorly because of lack of funding, but we only looked at two SWCDs in our case studies, and Hennepin County was the only really the poor performer that we ran into.
Okay. Representative Osmond.
And, thank you, Mr. Chair. And I know that you said that you did not have a chance to look at the operation of Bowser and how they actually function on a daily basis and so forth. And yet it seems as one of your major recommendations, or the major recommendation, is to change the structure as to how they are even how they even have their governance put together. Speaking as the former chair of the Finance Committee, I want all members to know that it's my opinion that Bowser has been drastically underfunded. The budget shortfalls of recent years has significantly impacted on it, because almost all their money comes from its general fund, and that's what, where with the reductions took place. Out of the major committees that I had responsibility for, we were able to go to other funds for DNR, other funds for MPCA. They basically came out as a wash on their, even though there were significant reductions on the general fund. But Bowser really took significant hits. And I thought that they were underfunded before all that occurred. And so to me, is it possible that their operation could be functioning quite well? The fact that they have so many brush fires to deal with to try and keep them from becoming forest fires, that some of those brush fires had to just be allowed to burn because they didn't have the personnel or the resources to even go out there and deal with the issues. That instead of being necessarily is it possible that they're problems that you're identifying, and you're exactly what I was hoping that your report would show, because I felt that there are significant problems out there, how we're going to deal with these issues, and we have to get aggressive on this, especially if we're going to meet the Clean Water Act. And so your report is excellent. I really commend you on bringing a full report. But the my concern is that because you did not have the opportunity to look at their structure, that it may be that internally, even from a governance standpoint, they could be operating adequately, but they just don't have the resources to go out there and deal with it, and that's the result. As a result, we there then discovering failures. Is that a possibility?
Mr. Chairman, if I might respond, but then others may well, as Representative Osmond and members. I want to clarify, I think what Jan meant to say was that we didn't look at every aspect of Bowser. We wanted to be fair. This is not a total evaluation of Bowser. But we did look at Bowser. We spent a lot of time with Bowser. But in the context of their oversight of local watershed entities. So I think we became very familiar with their deployment of resources, but more importantly, their attitude towards their role. And that's what we're addressing. And their authority, which is limited. But as I said in my opening remark, Representative Osmond, we think that part of the problem is that Bowser's authority and resources have been limited. They have a lot of responsibilities. But I think if you were to see it as just an issue of resources, you would be missing this other issue that we raise. Now, we understand that that is a very sensitive issue. And we raise it very respectfully. We know that that structure was created here in the legislature. And as I said in my remarks, we know it has deep historical roots. It has logic to it. It is a very delicate political balance. But we think that it weakens Bowser. And we think just philosophically that as an executive branch agency, that there ought to be more direct accountability to the governor and to the legislature, and not to a board that is dominated by local interests. You know, local control is something that we respect a great deal in this state, and we do at the Office of the Legislative Auditor. But local control here controls a state agency in the executive branch. So there is a role, certainly, for local control. But I think what we raise is the question of should it extend into controlling an agency in the executive branch of state government. We think, going forward, that Bowser needs to be a stronger oversight organization. And we certainly see that the governor, but we think any governor, will make water in this state a real top priority. It is undoubtedly one of our most important resources. And to not allow the governor of this state to appoint the executive head of Bowser when the governor appoints the head of the Department of Education, of the Department of Human Services, the Department of Transportation, and I could go on. But to say to the governor he does not have the authority to appoint the head of the state agency that is involved in overseeing watershed management, and that is such a vital part of protecting our water, we simply think that needs to be changed.
Okay. Representative Osmond.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for the response. I think that the, in order to help us be able to gain our own support for that type of an approach or that type of a remedy, can you give me some examples as to where the current board has used its influence to try and prevent things from happening or has had a negative impact that you have been able to observe or document out there to demonstrate that it's more than just a feeling as to who should be in control, but there is really evidence that shows that this really has been failing and not working.
Mr. Chairman,
Mr. Nobles,
Representative Osmond, I think what we can point to is the inaction that has occurred in situations where there was dysfunction and ineffective local action, and Bowser was aware of it but did not want to get involved. But Mr. Patterson may want to elaborate.
Mr. Patterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond. The only time that we sat in an actual decision-making process of the board, it was actually a subcommittee or a committee that was dealing with the South Two River Watershed District. And I think this story is very telling. They're talking about what was happening in South Two River. And one of the board members said, I think the lesson here is we need to pay a lot more attention to what the watershed district are doing. And another board member said, that's not our job. So I think it's sort of just, that's the attitude they have. It's not their job to be telling watershed districts to do what they need to do. Another example, which I think is even more telling statewide, is that we asked Bowser for ratings of every single watershed district, SWCD, county, and WM in the state. They gave it to us. They have a pretty good idea of who's doing well and who's not doing well, but they asked us to keep those ratings not public. They're unwilling to tell entities, you're not doing a good job. And I think that's a very telling sign, too.
And Mr. Chairman and Mr. Representative Osmond, I will add just one other anecdote, which I also found telling, and that was, when we raised this issue with Bowser about the influence of members of the board who come representing local watershed management organizations. We ask him, how do you deal with this? And, of course, his view, which you are undoubtedly aware of, is that it's not a problem, that the current structure is appropriate and effective. But he did tell us that he has had conversations with new board appointees when they have asked, now I've been appointed to this state board, but I represent a local interest. How do I balance those two responsibilities? Our point of view is that conversation should not need to take place for somebody appointed by the governor to a state board to protect state interests. They should understand from day one, without needing that conversation, that they are not there to represent a local interest, but to represent the interests of the state overall.
Thank you, Mr. And Representative Moe had a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Representative Osmond went pretty far in the direction that I would like to go with my questions. First, I represent a northern district, and Mr. Nobles made the point that we have people who are on a board who are from a local district yet have to make statewide decisions, and I would like to give a contrary view that, in fact, that's what we do also. We are state representatives, but we also are elected to represent, and I'm not finished, are elected to represent our constituents also. And I also, and just a semantics thing, Mr. Patterson used the phrase outstate, and I think that might be a terminology issue, but from the perspective of Northern Minnesota District, it's symbolic of this a certain maybe a meddling or an effort to tell our county commissioners or elected soil and water conservation district officials how to do our business. And while we are a state and we try to work together as best we can, I think we run the risk of having an unneeded pitched battle by going down this road. And you said yourself, Mr. Patterson, that you had basing these recommendations on two case studies, and only one of which you said was a failure, and that one was in Hennepin County. So I guess I could ask for maybe some more clarification on where you came to those recommendations.
Mr. Patterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative. Our recommendation isn't just based on two case studies. We just did two case studies of soil and water conservation districts. We did 15 case studies. We looked at six watershed districts. We looked at two counties. We looked at two WMOs. We looked at a couple of joint powers boards. We looked at a district, or actually a watershed that doesn't have a watershed district overseeing it and managing it. So it's based on the totality of those case studies, plus interviews that we did with a lot of interest around the state. We collected a lot of financial data, and this is detailed in Chapter 2 of our report, about the activities and what's going on with watershed districts and soil water conservation districts. We found information such as that there is several entities out there that are spending over 50% of their funds on general administration, when they should be, in our opinion, spending focusing the resources on putting projects in the ground, regulating, carrying out education efforts. And these are areas of the state that have impaired waters. We also, I think, backing that up, is we had Bowser's own assessments. It's not public information, but you know, Bowser's assessment said there are a lot of entities around the state that are not performing the way they probably should be. So if we take all those in totality, I feel as though we're very confident. We can say that performance is mixed. There are some entities out there doing a great job, but there are some entities, several out there, that are struggling, and Bowser needs to address it.
Mr. Chairman, I might also go back to the point about legislators representing local interests and coming to St. Paul, but arriving at an overall statewide public interest. That's true. It's why we have the legislature. This is an executive agency. And so, again, our view is that, yes, we have a branch of government that sorts out those competing and sometimes even conflicting interests. You set the policy. Bowser should be there to implement the policy that you set after it's been sorted out by the electoral process that we have that brought all of you here. In a way, you've set up at Bowser another many quasi-legislature to again bring together competing interests in an advocacy forum to sort that all out again. We think that sorting out should take place here with you as elected representatives, and that Bowser should be in line with other executive agencies in terms of its structure. I mean, the analogy would be that you would have a Department of Education with a commissioner appointed by a board that represents school boards and school administrators and not appointed by the governor. That would be the analogy, and you could go through all of the various departments of state government and have that kind of model. And we're just suggesting that Bowser should be more in line with the structure of accountability that we have in every other function that we perform as the state government.
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Nobles, just to follow up on what you said, referencing education, if we look at performance measures that we've put in education over the last few years at the federal level, at the state level, and then to see the entities at the local level spending over 50% of their funds on general administration, I think we've heard a variety of proposals for addressing that type of thing in other agencies. And so consistency as a state legislator, I know there are challenges with being consistent, but we're being asked for performance measurements and funding tied to performance measurements across the board, particularly in education. And here we have water quality, where this report does identify some problems. It also does highlight some very good local folks, and that's been my experience, is that there are some really good local entities and there's some that are struggling. The challenge is a lot of the folks that are in the room here watching the release of this report are asking us for a lot of money to put into these local entities to solve water quality problems. And so you give us a map here, but it doesn't quite give us the end point. And I'm sure that everybody who's here has probably an opinion on where we can go and where we don't go. But I just want to thank you for what you've done. And I found the comparison with education interesting.
Representative Lagunias.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's a little bit different issue here, and I'm not as familiar with Bowser as I should be. But when they give a grant to a local unit of government, tell us about the detail involved in the work plan that is presented from a local unit of government to Bowser asking for money, and the follow-up to that work plan.
Mr. Chair, I'm Representative Lagunias. What Bowser does is they have these 10-year management plans, and I think they use that as a guide, that people really can't grant from Bowser unless they have those plans in place. And it does vary by the type of entity. Soil and water conservation districts have to submit annual plans to see what they're going to do with their funds. There's a little more accountability there. And there's also some follow-up. I know that they actually go back and do some random audit to make sure that people did what they said they were going to do. But we found nothing wrong with that part of it, the grant administration. I think Bowser is doing a good job in that. The question that we have is, what are they actually doing in the end? What's the outcome? Are they actually cleaning up the waters? And that's where we think the oversight is deficient. So I don't think the concern is sort of the grant administration side of it. It's more of, what are we getting with those grant dollars?
Yeah. Representative Lagunias.
I still want to pursue this line, because you can have an overall plan that's this big, but a grant is only going to allow you to do these four tasks. And my question is there a work plan when you get the money that says, I'm going to do these four tasks, and this task is going to cost $10,000, this $20,000, this $30,000, and in the end, this is what you get. Is there a work plan like that for a grant of money from Bowser, over and above the overall plan?
Mr. Patterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lagunias, because we were focused on sort of overall outcome oversight, not the grant administration as much, we didn't get into that. Probably Bowser could talk about that a little bit more when they get up here. I think, you know, when you get to the annual plans that the SWCDs submit, they may be getting more into that. But the watershed districts, you don't see that. And again, watershed districts aren't really getting much money from Bowser. And again, most of Bowser's grants aren't performance-based. They're often formula-based. And I think a good example of that would be the Hennepin Conservation District, which essentially became dysfunctional. It was in a lot of turmoil. And even though the county said, we're so concerned, we're taking our money away, Bowser continued to have to fund the entity. So even if the entity was not in a position to use those funds effectively, Bowser continued to provide the funds.
Okay. I think I'll take one more question, then we'll have Bowser come forward. So, Representative Oguinius?
Yes, thank you. I think that gets more to the crux that the grants are formula-based rather than performance-based. And I think that's something that we, or outcomes-based. And that may be more of an issue.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just one concluding comment, because I think Representative Oguinius really hit the nail on the head. And that's our first sidebar, which is always our most important message. And it says, Minnesota needs a more results-oriented approach to watershed management. We have a lot of planning. We have a lot of process. We need to focus more on results.
One more question. Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Because our response was to Representative Oguinius's question, which is about grants, I believe that the frustration that you've expressed in the document, or the background I have, is on failure or difficulty that people have had with following through with long-term plans. Did you find any grants that were not being followed through, where there were specific requirements and Bowser was not requiring those specifics to be put in place?
Mr. Chair, we didn't find that, but I tell you, we really weren't looking for that. We were much more on the outcome-based oversight rather than the grant administration. It's not part of the formal scope of our evaluation.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that's important for the committee to recognize it. Well, all the huge responsibility that the Bowser's had is to administer grants all over the state of Minnesota. Tremendous time-consuming effort. They've not looked at how the organization operates and have not evaluated the grant proposals. They're saying that people have put together plans and that has not been followed through with adequately, and I recognize that, and I think that we can need to address that as a legislature. But I don't want people to have the assumption that somehow Bowser has not been following through on the responsibility with the funding and the grant responsibilities that they had to make sure that that was put in place. I've never had any complaints that they've not followed through on that.
Okay, well, thank you for your report today. And I would like those representing Bowser to come forward. We have the executive director of Bowser, Jim Jasky, also Mr. Randy Kramer, who is the chair of the board, and Mr. Steve Woods is here as well. And if you could state your names for the record and begin, please. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members, I am Randy Kramer, chair of the Board of Water and Soil Resources. I'm one of the three citizen members appointed by the governor. I'm an active farmer from Renville County. I would like to thank you for the opportunity to address you as a committee today. And as you know, the board hired a new executive director in December of 06. I'd like to introduce John Jasky, and John will make some comments, and then I will finish with my comments on the report. So, Mr. Jasky.
Mr. Jasky.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members. I'll fill the name for the record. It's John, J-O-H-N, not Jim.
Sorry.
I have a cousin named Jim, but he's got other things to do today, I'm sure. Last name is spelled Jasky, J-A-S-C-H-K-E. And as Board Chairman Kramer just said, I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Water and Soil Resources. This is my fourth day in that position, having started on Monday. This past Friday was my last day as Dakota County's Water Resources Manager, where my responsibilities included managing the Vermilion River Watershed Organization. While I've had a limited amount of time to preview this report that was presented to you today, I'd like to offer some comments that reflect my local perspective I had as of last week and my state perspective that I now have beginning this week. as the chairman noted, Steve Woods from our staff, the assistant director, will be available for more specific comments. He was the one who spent most of the time on staff working with the auditor's office on the report from the Belger perspective. What I have seen is that there is no model that can fit all circumstances. There really is no one-size-fits-all approach, and any of you that have tried to put on a piece of clothing and said one-size-fits-all can probably relate to that. Each watershed, its issues, and its solutions require a customized application of policy and science. The uniqueness of each watershed has become even more pronounced in the last few years with greater federal mandates and greater expectations from citizens for clean water. I'm not going to give you a long list of examples that might counter some of the points made by the prior presenters that someday down the road we may choose to do that. But today, I just want to let you know that from my perspective, watershed management really is different from one place to another. It depends on the size. You saw the picture of the Lake Pepin watershed. There are also watersheds that encompass only several hundred acres that drain to a lake. And citizens in that lake, really, that's the way they look at a watershed. They look at that area that drains to their local body of water of interest. It also depends on whether the focus is on a water quality issue or a flood damage prevention issue or managing stormwater infrastructure, which many cities are responsible for. And it also depends, in some cases, where we're just trying to preserve the high-quality waters that we have, especially in our northern part of the state. What watersheds have in common is that their health is obviously tied and highly correlated to land uses and practices upstream. That was noted in the report clearly. Another thing they have in common, regardless of the scale or the landscape, is that the management of a watershed requires a balance between state responsibility and local autonomy. The state's role in water management has included data collection, management plan review and approval, funding in some instances, and certainly to support local resources in almost every case, fiscal oversight, and technical assistance. While the state role and local roles are both needed to get results, a critical element that's really necessary in all cases to achieve success is a high level of ownership at that local level. If you don't have the ownership, very little can be accomplished. That's important for two reasons, because at the local level, land use planning and decision making is their responsibility. Minnesota does not have and has never had a statewide land use ordinance, to my knowledge. Both local ordinances at the city and county and township level, and to some extent included in watershed district standards, are the things that drive the land use decision making. The second point is that significant conservation achievements, especially those that require reductions in non-point source pollution, the pollution that runs off the landscape rather than out of the pipe, can only be realized by engaging private landowners and citizens at the community centers, the front doors, and the kitchen tables, and that role is really best left to those who are most closely connected to those communities, and that's, again, our local governments. That's the role that they play in this water management system we have. In my experience, I've not seen an example of where land use planning and decision-making did not benefit from a more inclusive approach. Being inclusive can take more time, more deliberation, but in the long term, it pays dividends because we get good decisions and sustainable decisions. The 17 board members on the Board of Water and Soil Resources are responsible for that policy deliberation and decision-making that wed the state and local perspectives. One or the other may not carry the day. We need both of those perspectives brought together. The Bowser model for conservation delivery, involving citizens, local officials, and agency representatives on that board as partners, is a strong one, and one that we believe is something that we should look to do more of instead of less. As noted in the report, Bowser's staff and resources have been significantly reduced over the past 5 or 6 years, while at the same time we've been asked to address increasing demands in wetland protection and conservation easement acquisition and restoration. Also noted in the report is the fact that the agency's formal oversight is largely limited to its state grant authority and responsiveness to public petitions. And so what can we do more of if necessary and prudent? With more resources, we could be more regular and systematic in our approach to local water management. However, to make sure it's efficient and effective, our board would need to engage its partners on the state agency level and other stakeholders to evaluate what elements should be part of any potential expansion in this area. Among the questions that should be considered are the following. Should we beef up the financial auditing function the state auditor's office already has in place? or are we better served by establishing outcome measures for improved water quality? Another question that might be asked is there value in increasing the frequency of plan updates or reporting requirements to provide more opportunities for formal agency and citizen review? Or should we be focusing on the waters that are most impaired, already polluted? Or should we be spending more of our attention on preserving those that are still healthy? These are all decisions that locals have to make as they develop their strategies for addressing our water management needs. And finally, should there be a mechanism for a performance evaluation of each local water management organization? Or would a state role to do more facilitation to coordinate between these local organizations and state, federal, and other partners be a more effective approach? And as I mentioned, of course, any extra effort is going to take some additional resources to deal with the costs that are going to be required at the state and local level. In conclusion, sound management of our water resources is a key to a healthy and thriving Minnesota. We all understand that. And that view is shared by a large and growing number of local communities and citizens. The examples in the report have highlighted some of the factors that are necessary for successful watershed management. But clearly, it requires a state and local partnership of each of them having a stake in that ownership to get better, cleaner water and to preserve what we have and restore what we need to get improved. So we believe it's important as we go forward to maintain that important balance between state responsibility and local autonomy. I've not had a chance to meet with all of you yet. I've had a chance to meet with just a couple of you on my first 4 days, but I hope to do more of that in the months ahead to discuss this issue in more detail as we move forward. And I think there are some good ideas out there. The report presents some of those, but we want to make sure that we don't come up with things that negatively affect that local and state balance, which really is important if we're going to manage our water resources in a sustainable way long term. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you, Mr. Jasky.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
Mr. Kramer. Sure. In general, I believe that the program audits are a good review of the process and programs, and I commend the Office of Legislative Auditor, the OLA, on the report as it was well done. I'd like to comment on two issues in the report that the Board and I see as our main differences in the recommendations from the OLA. The first is the appointment of the Executive Director by the governor or the hiring by the board. When I was appointed by the governor as a citizen member in July of 2003, I had no preconceived notion how the appointment process should work. But after going through the process of our new executive director and naming John Jasky in December, with employment, as he stated, starting 4 days ago, we, the board, feel that it's essential and the Board of Water and Soil Resources hire the executive director. In the hiring process, we had 36 applicants, 12 interviews, and second interviews. We were able to choose a candidate that reflects the views and goals of the state of Minnesota and the Board of Water and Soil Resources. In the report, I found no context that supported the summary findings of an appointed executive director, but in the text, I found contrary opinion. The report stated, "We did not find evidence that board members have acted inappropriately to overtly impede Bowser's executive director or staff. The board and I feel if the system is not broken, why fix it?" The second item of difference with the OLA report is the recommendation that the board is act in an advisory role only. With three local soil and water conservation district board members, three watershed district board members, three county commissioner board members, three citizens members, along with five agency members, them being the DNR, the MDA, MDH, MPCA, and University of Minnesota Extension, all appointed by the governor, we feel we represent the local citizens of the state of Minnesota, along with their views and goals for the state of Minnesota. We are the board of choice for private landowners of the state of Minnesota and represent 78% of the private lands in the state. If the board acted in an advisory role only, having no decision authority, why would the state agency members participate? How would local government and citizens participate? Our present system is working well, so why change it? As I stated before, the OLA report is a very good process and a needed process, and it's a great function of government. We all learn from the report, and it's a great check and balance system. I can assure you that the board will review the report and make necessary changes to address the findings within the report. I would encourage the committee to please read our response letter attached to the report. I'd also like to thank Mr. Nobles and his staff for the courtesy and willingness to work with me and the Bowser staff. Mr. Chairman, again, thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. The Board of Water and Soil Resources, including myself, are up to the challenge and look forward to working with the legislature and the governor's office to implement any changes or suggestions which may or may not occur this session or future sessions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kramer. And Representative Lagunias has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Kramer, for your testimony. The governor has told us now repeatedly, I think, to expect rigor. And if you were to listen to the governor, what suggestions would you give to us that would make this whole thing more rigorous, this whole protecting of the waters more rigorous?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiginius, I think that to keep the local control in place is very important, and that that we work through the process, and maybe I would agree with the report that there are things that Bowser could do, but it has to come from this body to go forward. I mean, we're only acting with the powers that we do have, and I would agree that if you as a body, and the legislative body and the governor, think that we need more oversight, we would be amenable to that. But we are, at this point, not stepping beyond our bounds of what the law allows us to do.
Representative Lagunias.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand you can't step beyond the bounds that you think you have right now. That's not my question. What would you tell us that you think you could do to improve our waters? What changes should we be making to make everything more rigorous, because that's our new standard?
Mr. Chair, Representative Wiginius, well, I think the programs that are in place, continue them, would be the first thing. The RIM funding that was not in the governor's budget, I think that's essential. We need to continue the buffers. We're doing the ditch study that was in the governor's budget. Drainage work group. We hope that we can continue on that path. The clean water legacy, I think that's very, very important, and that's where all the agencies that do sit on our board, we can work in partnership, and we don't have duplication of process, and we can actually get the projects on the ground and do the work.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kramer, as you were appointed, you were not elected, you were appointed to the office by governor at this point. And as you took on that responsibility, did you perceive yourself as being caught between your local, representing your local people and carrying out the duties of the state of Minnesota, or did you feel that by being appointed by the governor, it's your responsibility to look out for the state's interests?
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, I had no problem being appointed by the governor. I had taken on the state's responsibility. I am a citizen's member, but absolutely, I can, in farmer language, we switch hats and we move on. We're responsible for the waters of the state and responsible to the government.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another point I'd like to make is that as we're looking at trying to get compliance on the Clean Water Act and all the TMDLs that have to be put together, it's my understanding, clear understanding, that the MPCA is the one that's in charge and has the authority and responsibility for the compliance of the Federal Clean Water Act. But I know that when they go out there to try and get things done, sometimes they don't enjoy the confidence and the trust of the local people. I know that DNR has some of those same difficulties from time to time. What is the attitude of the property owners in the state of Minnesota towards working with the Board of Water and Soil Resources? You're a citizen representative, and I figure you know what your neighbors think of this whole thing.
Mr. Chair, Representative Osmond, I think that as I travel around the state as Chair Bowser and also in our local area, normally the bars are open for Bowser. We are the go-to agency that, we get to put the projects on the ground, as I've stated. one individual, a neighbor, told me that if someone from the DNR or someone from MPCA drives up, normally they scatter, or they think they want something, and that's not the case usually. But they have maybe a misunderstanding, but they have a lack of cooperation with them. We're with us, they're coming to us and asking us to do projects, do different things, and I think it's just, we're local, we're represented locally on our board, so the citizens of Minnesota actually have a voice, so that, if they have a problem, they can come forward, we can address it, and they can move up through the chain and get up to our board, and we can make decisions, and we can help them with the programs that we have.
Thank you.
Yeah. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Chair Kramer. I wanted to ask a question about a specific case study. The OLA highlighted the South Two Rivers Watershed District, and the day before yesterday we had a presentation by the Watershed Districts, and the OLA report kind of stops with the Bowser Board making a decision to accept the petition. But I was reading the other update from MOD that said that the entity that you accepted the petition on chose to sue you, and then the other districts acting as their association filed an amicus in support of that petition. I just want to know, is that correct?
Mr. Kramer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hansen. That was correct at the time, but the individuals on the Watershed Board have changed, and so they have withdrawn the petition at this time.
Representative Hansen.
So does the that watershed district still exist?
Mr. Kramer.
Mr. Chair, I'd have to defer to John for that one, or Steve.
I'll defer to Steve because I was not present as those deliberations took place.
Mr. Woods, if you'd state your name for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm Steve Woods. I'm Assistant Director with the Board of Water and Soil Resources. Representative Hansen, your question was, does the Watershed District still exist? The answer to that question is yes. The petition to challenge it has been withdrawn. However, this case is still in litigation. The appeals court has not made a ruling yet. So we're limited ability to comment on it, but there's still some judicial action to occur.
Representative Severson,
thank you, Mr. Chair, and committee. I just wanted the opportunity to say a few words here. I represent part of the South Two Rivers Watershed District, and I wanted to say thanks to the Office of Legislative Auditors for bringing this report forward. This was kind of a culmination of some things that have been transpiring from a citizens' grassroots movement for the last year and a half. Some citizens approached me. And this, I think, is what we really need to get the picture on, because this is supposed to be about grassroots movements. Citizen involvement in taking the temperature of our waters across the state, and they are the most effective in getting the things done we need to get done. I met with a lot of frustrated individuals because the efforts that they were making were being shunned by the local watershed. And the watershed was ineffective. In fact, established in 1986, 20 years, they had submitted one report, which was required under 103D that they submit them annually. Bowser had the responsibility to make sure that those reports were filed. It didn't happen. The district got taxed $800,000 in that 20 years and did not have maybe not even one project completed. And when they say that most of those monies were used in administration, it's probably more than 50%. Needless to say, when I met with the individuals, they were very upset about this process. And that was part of the thing that brought it to where we are today, was our desire to see some rectification. I put in a bill last year, and that bill was not heard in committee. It was actually shunned, and I was told that it would not get heard. I brought it to the House floor to bring this forward, and you as representatives actually voted to have this audit done. This is an audit, and I ask you to really listen to the legislative auditors who got into this over the summer and did many interviews with the people that were at the grassroots level and understood what the impact of this was, or the lack of impact. My concern on this whole process is that if we move forward from this point and say, that was nice, Bowser's doing their job, they're going to move on, we have negated a grassroots movement that really was significant and that I believe doesn't happen too often in this state, because most of the time when people run into a bureaucratic wall like typically happens with Bowser, they give up. They just don't have the time for it. We have had a significant thing happen here, and we need to pay attention to it. We need some reforms. One of the things that was so frustrating, if they were taxed at $800,000 over the last 20 years, never filed one report, and never had any of the impaired waters fixed, and their desire was to do that, what is it with the rest of the watersheds? And how do we get them engaged to really be the grassroots movement that can be effective if we continue to shun them and say, the organization we got in place is working? Members, I would just say, you know, from my perspective as a representative talking with the people and going through this process with the people, it isn't working. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for rambling on, but this, you know, I feel that the citizen side needs to be heard on this as well.
Representative Beinart.
Mr. Chair, my comment may come, you know, sort of in between what's been said here and Representative Wargenius' questioning, but I wanted to give Bowser a chance to respond. I believe that, Mr. Jeske, you really emphasized the importance of that local ownership, and justly so, and I think that was the point of the last comment about citizen involvement. My concern as a legislator in looking at this audit is to respond to what seems to be the wide range of performance of the watershed district and the discrepancy between what we want to achieve as a state and what's being achieved at many levels. And I'd like Bowser to have a chance to respond to that discrepancy. The challenge to a performance-based system is a challenge to address that discrepancy, and I just want to hear what you would say about that as an agency.
Mr. Jeske.
Mr. Chair and Representative, certainly there are some do better ideas out there, and I think some of those need to be explored in a very careful way. You know, the idea of a performance management approach, you know, I think the idea of a report card or some such thing would be explored, but that's a two-way endeavor. When you assess performance, you know, you're trying to both evaluate as well as build up, and I think there are some possibilities in that area. Certainly facilitating the organizations that are in a multiple fashion. You've got cities, townships, counties, watershed organizations, soil and water conservation districts, making sure they're all working in the same direction along with their many state and federal partners too. There's a lot of organizations at all levels involved in watershed management, and I think we want to be able to make sure they're doing that well together. Training could be a part of it. Certainly, if you're not prepared, you're going to have difficulty being successful. Maybe there's more opportunity for review and comment on projects and plans that local watershed and other water management organizations are doing. Certainly, they're all publicly available and publicly noticed, but maybe there's more promotion of that needs to be put into play. Finally, you know, there's a role for dispute resolution and adjudication. The Board of Water and Soil Resources provides that in some other programs now. But again, the report looks at a very narrow slice of what the Board of Water and Soil Resources is responsible for. So there are some ideas out there, and we look forward to working on the specifics of some of those ideas in the months ahead.
Representative Lanning.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, for inviting me to also be here today at the table. I'm sorry that Mr. Nobles has left. I had a couple of questions.
He's here.
Oh, there he is, back there. I think this report has a lot of good food for thought and issues that we need to address. And I've been dealing with water management issues for many years. But there are a couple of things that I've would have liked to have seen in the report that are not there. First of all, if we're going to properly manage water in the state, we have to do it on a watershed and a basin perspective or level. And we need the oversight, as the auditor has pointed out. But the report, from what I've seen and what I've heard, doesn't address the fact that we've got two-thirds of the state where that's not organized on a watershed. Two-thirds of the state. We have no basin authority in this state. So here we are. How can Bowser give oversight to water management when there is no basin authority? There is no watershed authority in a big part of the state. So I guess, Mr. Nobles, I don't know if you had an opportunity. I did have an opportunity to meet with Mr. Nobles and his staff this past spring, but maybe if you could address the absence of those issues in this report.
Mr. Chairman, let me just comment briefly, and then I'd like John Patterson to also comment. I think this whole thing did start, as many of you know, with frustration about what was happening and not happening at the local level. And I think that's still very much something that you need to consider, and we do address that to some degree in the report and have some options. I think one of the things we all recognize is that there is such a variety and myriad of different kinds of organizations out there that in and of itself is confusing, and I think that point was mentioned by some people. I think most of us who go in and, for example, vote for our Soil and Water Conservation Commissioner don't have any idea what we're voting for, what their responsibilities are. And yet we vote, and then there are other organizations that are appointed by the county commissions, and then they have taxing authority. So there's a real mixed up and complicated system out there. And frankly, if we had found that just one structure was the right way to go, we would have said that. But we did find mixed results in terms of the kinds of structures and their performance. So we didn't come back with this clear message about what kind of structure at the local level we should have out there statewide. So I realize that that's a disappointment. But I can only tell you that we just didn't have the facts, the findings, to support the idea that there is just one structure at the local level. But I think it's the legislature also needs to look at what you point to as where we don't have structures and activities going on. That's what I thought a lot about, and thought about the Bowser's role too, in terms of what are we doing as a state when there is no local activity to deal with impaired waters or protect against the impairment of waters. I think this, again, is something you need to take on as a major policy issue. I think we have very much supported here, and we've heard certainly a lot of support among you, that there has to be a lot of local involvement. As I said in my opening remarks, it grows out of the fact that water is affected by land, and land is local. So we need local officials, local citizens involved. But the question remains, what if they don't get involved? What are you going to do as a state? What are we going to do when there isn't the kind of local initiative to tackle problems? And frankly, sometimes because of the conflicting interests that are involved, there are some people at the local level who don't want very rigorous watershed management because it conflicts with some of their development interests or other interests. So Ms. Patterson may want to comment further.
Mr. Patterson.
Mr. Chair, Representative, I think if you look on page 63 of our report, chapter 5 of our report has several policy options, and I think we tried to at least discuss the issue you were raising. And one of our policy options is consolidating at a local level. You can envision, rather than having counties, watershed districts, soil and conservation districts, all managing water flowing over the same piece of land, you consolidate, do the whole thing on a watershed basis, have one entity. It'd be a lot simpler, it'd be a lot more... there can be more accountability, so you know exactly who's responsible for what. But the problem we have is that, you know, water and land are completely tied. And land use planning is going to be a county and city function unless legislature changes that. So doing land planning on a county basis and doing watershed planning on a watershed basis, you know, causes conflict, and that causes problems. So going totally to a watershed basis is problematic. It makes a lot of sense in some regards, but on the other hand, it has some downsides to it, too. other concern why we didn't do a full recommendation was that if you did that, you consolidate all to a watershed basis. There's a lot of entities out there doing a really good job out there. They may be a soil and water conservation district, it may be a joint powers organization, and you may get rid of those entities, and you lose the partnerships, the good work they're doing, and would replacement entity necessarily do a good job? I don't know. I guess our conclusion in the end was, we have the system we have, you know, we could maybe could have a better system, maybe should investigate a better system, but at a minimum, let's make sure the system we have is working as well as it can, and that's where we think it should have more of an outcome performance-based approach to having the locals have the autonomy to make the local decisions, but if they're not doing a good job, someone, Bowser, should step in and make sure they are doing a good job.
Representative Osmond, Representative Lanning, you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The point I want to make is that we're not going to get the job done on water management unless we've got to handle this on a watershed basis and a basin level, and we deal with land as well as water, as you pointed out. And if we want to do the job on cleaning up our impaired waters and do the kind of things that people expect us to do on water management, we've got to come up with a better mechanism than we currently have. I liken our current system to Swiss cheese. We've got holes all over. And how are we going to get a handle on this with an approach that is hit and miss? Thank you.
Representative Osmond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to just kind of wrap my comments up here quickly, and that is I really appreciate this legislative auditor's report. I think they did a very good job and got us a lot of information for the entire legislature to take a look at and to see how things can be improved, because this is the time that we have to start moving forward on these things. But the concerns have been really focused around the accountability as well as the responsibility functions, and I don't believe there's any quick fix. And it's certainly, Representative Severson, I don't want to see us throw the baby out with the bathwater. I don't want us to, because there's a lot of districts. I've been around 20 years watching these districts, and there's a lot of them that work really, really well. And I know that this organization, it's one of the get-things-done organizations I've been able to go to over the years. And I don't want to see us throw things out that have been working. But I think if we look at firmer policies and legislative direction up here, that will help them out a great deal. I think that that's part of what the report is looking at. I think we need to increase the resources. I'd love to get, Director Jashke, I'd love to get a list of the, in recent years, the increased number of duties that have been, the legislature has placed upon Bowser versus the decrease in resources that we provided you at that same time. I think that we're looking at a problem that we've all participated in helping create, and this document brings it right straight to us for us to be responsible for and to work together to get this resolved. And I thank each and every one of you, especially Representative Severson and your efforts for getting this to all of our attention, so that in a manner that we can, I think, collectively work on this. But I do not think that removing citizenry from that process is a quick fix that would resolve it. The governor appoints the board, the governor appoints the director. I mean, that's not going to fix the more than you can handle problem with fewer and fewer resources, which I think has been right at the root of the difficulty.
Okay, well, thank you for coming today. I really appreciate it. I think it was a very good discussion. There's a lot of food for thought here. I couldn't agree more, Representative Osmond. This is the time that we should be looking at this with the Clean Water Legacy and the importance that our legislative activities are playing and cleaning up our waters. And I think also one other point, we do have to look at the local organizations of the watershed management boards and the watershed districts and the WMOs and the soil and water conservation districts, how they're organized, which model works best. I do think we need to look at doing things on a basin basis like we've done in the Red River and we need to look at the bigger picture. So I think one of the big things we're trying to do here is we're trying to figure out how to best coordinate things in a statewide level, make sure we're all on the same page and working together here. With that, we're going to be adjourning now until next Tuesday, and we are going to reconvene at that time in the House chambers. And it's going to be a meeting between all of the environment committees here in the House and in the Senate, and also the Transportation Committee here in the House, and also the Energy Committees in the House and the Senate. And we're going to be hearing testimony on the issue of climate change and global warming, and it's going to include, as presenters, Dr. David Tillman, who's with the a professor of ecology, evolution, and behavior at the University of Minnesota. Also, Dr. Lee Frelick of the University of Minnesota, forest ecologist, and Will Steger, who will also be presenting that day. And one other person, Dr. Lucinda Johnson of the University of Minnesota, for the Minnesota Natural Resources Research Institute in Duluth will be here. So that'll start at 4 o'clock, and look forward to seeing you all there. Thanks. Meeting adjourned.